Welcome to the WBFO Press Pass. I'm Mark Scott. We're joined this week by Buffalo News suburban editor Bruce Andriach. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me, Mark.
Well, the outer suburbs of Erie County and the communities beyond in some six other counties will be represented by a new congressperson starting in January. Republican Chris Collins defeated incumbent Democrat Kathy Hochul in the new 27th district. Now, this district is mostly Republican in enrollment, yet Collins barely beat Hochul. What were some of the factors that made this race so close?
Well, I think that from the polling, we knew that it was going to be very close, and I think that the two main things were Kathy Hochul had the power of incumbency behind her, so that mitigated some of the enrollment disadvantage that she has. But Chris Collins is a figure that obviously appeals to a lot of voters in that district. There is a Republican majority in the 27th now. And Collins, I think, is somebody that voters looked at as somebody bringing more fiscal responsibility to Washington. Whether he'll be able to do that as one person is another question. But I think that probably continues to be the biggest factor for voters, is which of these people will do what I, as a voter, want to see done with the economy. I don't think Kathy Hochul did anything wrong. I think, we'll talk a little bit about the advertising and how that portrayed the two of them. I think it was just a simple matter that Chris Collins was, you can say he was a divisive figure as county executive. He was very popular with a lot of people, and I think that translated well to this race.
Also, though, what made it so close, at least in my opinion, was her likability, and he is not that warm and fuzzy, and perhaps if he was more likable, we might have seen a wider margin.
That's possible. Just watching the debates that the two of them had, I think you're right. She comes across as a lot maybe friendlier figure than he does. But, you have to ask yourself what people are looking for. I mean, are some voters looking for a person who reminds them of their neighbor and seems like a nice person to talk to? Or do people want the person who says he wants to go in and take care of their money for them? And I think it comes down to almost a mathematical equation, that there are more people out there who said, I'm more interested in having that guy who's going to keep my taxes low. He did it as county executive. Let's see if he can do it in Congress.
Well, Collins has been a CEO. He's been the man in charge. Now, that experience translated well when he was county executive. But now that he's going to be a member of Congress, he's just one of 435. How do you think he'll fare in that kind of collegial environment?
Well, that's a question. He's certainly not the first high-powered executive to make his way to Washington, who then has to figure out how to be one of the group instead of on his own. I imagine that he'll probably follow the same path that was set before him, and that is figure out how to make alliances with other people, figure out who shares his vision for what he wants to do, and then try to do it. He is just one person. He is one person in a smaller part of the country, where the needs of upstate New York aren't often what maybe the rest of the country is looking for. So he's going to have to adjust a little bit. I think it's interesting, too, that that idea of the CEO as politician is something that we've seen a lot this year. I think that was Mitt Romney's calling card as well. And maybe the answer there is it can work on a congressional level. It maybe even can work on a statewide race for a senator. But apparently it didn't work quite as well for the presidency this year.
I've read some analysis that Hochul was hurt by a negative ad that claimed Collins cut jobs at a company he once owned here. Yet I heard more complaints from friends about that obnoxious Halloween ad that an independent PAC supporting Collins ran on local TV stations. Now, I know millions are spent on these ads, so they must work, but I'm still left wondering how any thinking voter is going to be influenced by some of these awful and misleading ads.
I'm not sure that they do work. I question that. I think that they're done because that's what's done. I don't know that you can show me any kind of study that says, well, we know that our candidate was elected because this negative ad was effective. I know we can all think about ads that were really negative going back historically. We can think of ads that are memorable. I really, as a voter, I don't think an ad has ever affected me. I do have to say that sometimes the people who say they're undecided voters are a mystery to me, too. I'm not sure how that can happen quite as much. But, I think that there's a little bit too much emphasis placed on advertising. And I think that one of the takeaways I have from this election year is you know, advertising is a zero-sum game. I don't think it hurt or helped either candidate here. I think that when you're looking at two candidates with clearly defined positions on the issues that matter, I think that's what voters are going to determine their decision on. It's not going to be on which ad is more or less annoying.
There were two towns in Erie County, West Seneca and Alden, where residents were asked to reverse the government downsizing that took effect a couple of years ago. And in both cases, voters overwhelmingly supported retaining the smaller boards. What does this all say?
Well, first, it says that when I wrote a column a while ago thinking that this was going to be reversed, that I was mistaken. But I think it says that voters are interested in doing what they can do to reduce the cost of government when it doesn't have a huge impact on them. We're seeing this play out with town budgets and the county budget right now. Yes, I want my taxes to stay lower or not go up too much, but I don't want services cut. When you cut two town board members, the argument I've been making for a few years is you're not really seeing any kind of change in your life. What you're seeing and what you're hearing is your elected officials complain more about what they have to do and how finding a quorum for a meeting can be difficult. Or if somebody's absent, it throws things into disarray. I think what voters are saying here is we've made the decision. Let it go. This is how it is from now on. Now, I'm not sure that's going to translate to every other town. You know, Kevin Gaughan, who pushed this idea, convinced people in several towns to do it. But at the end of this push, Grand Island said, no, we're sticking with five. I don't know if any other towns are going to go this way, but I think what I've come to conclude is that I don't think the towns that have gone to three are going back to five.
You wrote a column near and dear to my heart last week because I have strong feelings about this topic, and that's storm preparedness and the reaction of people when a storm fails to materialize. Now, one local blogger posted on his Facebook page that all meteorologists here in Buffalo should be fired because we escaped Sandy's fury despite some dire warnings. And I would respond, really? It would have been better if we were hit hard?
Yeah, and you know, yes, there have been times when our local meteorologists have said that something dire is coming and it doesn't materialize. And I'm right at the front of the line saying, you know, could we have couched that a little bit? In the case of Sandy, that simply isn't true. And I'm not sure what this blogger is talking about. It was very clear that the worry for Western New York here was the remnants of Sandy and what it could do, that wind could be coming from an unusual direction. It could be very powerful. We all knew, and I think that meteorology should be applauded for predicting with some amazing precision exactly what was going to happen along the eastern seaboard to New Jersey and New York City. But warning us about what could happen, especially with a storm like this, is a good thing. Telling us to be prepared is a good thing. Going out and buying batteries, going out and buying extra water, making sure that if you have a generator that it's working, if you got a sump pump after October of 06, a backup, that it's working. These are all good things. There is nothing wrong with being prepared. Now, if you hear that a windstorm is coming and you abandon your home for 6 weeks because you're so frightened by what was said, yeah, that's a little bit of an overreaction. But being prepared, making sure you have gas in your car, that's a smart thing to do. And the fact that our meteorologists err on the side of making sure that we're prepared as opposed to being unaware of what's coming, you know, I would prefer that happen. As I wrote in that column, let's all keep in mind that the reason we remember the storm of October 2006 is because the meteorologists did not put it all together quickly enough, and we blame them for not warning us. So it's a no-win proposition.
I do recall that day. I did a newscast at 12 noon, and I had it on tape, and it was rainy this afternoon with highs around 40. Tonight, maybe a little snow, lows 30. This is at 12 noon.
Right.
I went out to a lunch. The station was having a luncheon to honor staff members, snow started falling. By the time we came out of the lunch, there was a white coating on the ground, and it got worse from there. So, and then finally, the Weather Service issues the winter storm warning, but
right.
They did not earlier that day.
Yeah, that's, you know, if you want to blame a meteorologist for any forecast in his or her career, you can look back at that one and say, how did we miss this one? And I think that if they had it to do over again, maybe they would have looked at their models and been a little bit more warning in what they had to say. But let's keep in mind, as I said in that column, meteorology is is a science. It's not an exact science. The words that we use with it are forecast and prediction. It's looking into the future. It's taking different things into account to try to tell us what's going to happen. Most of the time, it's amazing how precise weather forecasts are today. The fact that they, again, err on the side of caution is something we should applaud, not denigrate.
And the fact is, man can't control natural forces. So despite the best models, the best forecasts, Mother Nature will do what Mother Nature wants to do.
Right, exactly. And I don't see that changing anytime soon. So that's we're going to have to get used to that.
Yeah. Well, Bruce, thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me, Mark.
Bruce Andrianch is suburban editor of the Buffalo News. Mark Scott, WBFO News.